jam. Got me running round in circles, grin upside down. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Clay B., a 7-Up member. That means he gets up daily at 7 a.m. to discuss the literature, read the literature, discuss it. And, you know, he got sober. I'm going to tell a story for him. I got sober right about the same time I got sober. And I was going up to the Serenity House of Buford often, as well as coming down here. Clay stuck his neck out and vouched for me to get a job at a swank little restaurant in Buford. We thought it was pretty swank at the time. I told the general manager that I'd had about 4 years of fine dining experience. And I didn't understand complete honesty, because sometimes you leave out something. You know. It turned out all my experience was like 25 years earlier, so it wasn't any recent experience. And he discovered that soon. But I picked up a 2-year chip at the Serenity House at the lunch meeting at noon, and went to my first day on the job, and it was a wine tasting for the staff. So a vineyard was there with like 4 or 5 different bottles open, and they were pouring them tall wine glasses, and it was going around, and I'm looking at the guys I'm going to be working with, and it's the first night I'm going to be on the floor, and they're just pounding this wine. Clay and I both just sniffed the wine and just passed it to the next guy. And my GM looked at me and he said, "You got a problem with wine?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, not if I don't drink it." And with that, I'm going to turn it over to the real...
The real what?
Server extraordinaire.
Thanks, John.
He taught me everything.
Hello, everybody. My name is Clay and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, he told me that he had all this experience, and he wasn't very good. But he's been my friend ever since. So a few weeks back, I'm in here for a Monday night meeting, and Tim asked me to tell my story on the 30th of December. And I've been sober for 11 years now, and nobody's ever asked me to tell my story. And I panicked, and I said, I'll get back to you. And I got out in the parking lot, and I called my sponsor, and he said, yeah, do it. I said, all right. So I called Tim up, said, I'll do it. And so I called my sponsor again the next day, and I said, so how do I do this? Do I write something down? Do I prepare anything? He said, no, you get down there early, and you sit in the parking lot, and you talk to God, and you pray for his wisdom to guide you through your story. And so that's what I did. So I don't have anything written down. I'm hoping I have enough material. I have enough material. I hope I remember enough material to fill up the time that I'm supposed to fill up. I got out of my truck after doing that prayer, and I said, all right, God, this is on you now. And so here we go. I was born of what I thought were normal parents. Mom and dad were high school sweethearts, both college dropouts. Dad joined the Army, and Dad was stationed in El Paso, Texas, and that's where I was born. And about the time I was born, he got out of the Army. We moved to New Mexico. I was there a year where my sister was born, and then we moved to Puerto Rico, and I was there a year, and then we moved to the Virgin Islands, and I was there a year, and then we moved to California when I was four, Los Angeles area. And I lived in California for 10 years. We lived in three different houses, two different school systems out there in California. And I never felt like I fit in there. I was picked on. I was bullied. I was smart. I got great grades. But I was always picked on. I was always bullied. Never had friends. Friends I thought were friends, turns out, as I look back, were not friends. I just didn't fit in anywhere. I got into the gifted program, and you know, I'd get anything, any kind of accomplishment that I did, great grades, I'd get praised for it, and then I would fail. As soon as I got praised for something, I would fail again. I'd get into the gifted program, and there was always, I was jealous of the people that were smarter than me. You know, I always thought I was the smartest person, and I liked being the smartest person until I got into that. And then I wasn't the smartest person anymore. And so I hated myself again. And it was like that forever. And then at 14, we moved to Italy. And that was a great opportunity for me. Dad's company paid for my sister and I to go to these very posh English-speaking prep schools. And I went to this school called Notre Dame International, affiliated with the university that everybody's aware of. All boys school, fantastic education opportunity. And I completely fucked that up. Just stopped going to class. I didn't want to be in Italy. I was mad. It was 1976, and I was missing the bicentennial. And I was mad because for 2 years, I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember that. Some of you are. But this country was bananas about the bicentennial from 74 to 76. And we moved away in June, so I was going to miss it. And I was mad. And so I just checked out even further. And then, of course, I was there a while, and I realized 200 years is nothing. I'm living in a city that's been there for 3,000 years, but that's another story. Anyway, while I'm over there, 14, and my parents had gone, all through growing up, Mom and Dad would give my sister and I a little bit of wine with dinner on special occasions, and we'd get a sip of Dad's scotch and soda or Mom's rum and coke, and special occasions. Never enough to get us drunk, but enough to give us the taste. So, 14, Mom and Dad go out, my sister's out with her friends, and I decided to get into the rum and coke. And I don't know how much I drank, but it was enough that I puked up the stairs and I puked back down the stairs because I had to clean it all up before Mom and Dad got home. And somehow I managed to. I never got in trouble for that, but that's when it started. That's when I became an alcoholic at 14, right there, my first drunk ever. I loved that. Didn't mind the puking. I really loved that feeling. I was not myself anymore. I was somebody else, and it was awesome. And I kept getting into Mom and Dad's liquor after that. And I kept getting in trouble after that, doing more rotten things and more rotten things. I was doing rotten things all growing up, but I got more and more trouble. We moved from there to Canada when I was 16, to Toronto. And for whatever reason, I burned down three houses. I was breaking into houses, and I burned three of them down to cover up my fingerprints. That was my reasoning, okay? And they were all on my paper route, so I got caught pretty quick. I call myself bright, but there's things that will tell you I'm not that bright. I ended up doing 6 months in a loony bin up there, and I got 3 years probation. And which, when you consider burning down three houses, that's not too bad. But while I was locked up in the loony bin, I met all kinds of really cool people that talked about drugs and, you know, more about alcohol. And so when I got, and my parents, there was a guy that was in there that was being released. He'd been at the big bad loony bin for like real bad criminals. And he was on his way out. He was 19. He'd been in a loony bin since he was 12. Because he, I think, killed somebody. I never got the total story, but he did something bad. My parents, he was a great bullshit artist, and my parents fell in love with him and took him into our house to give him a halfway house kind of feel, except in a nice home. My parents were quite well off at this point in life, so we had a really nice house and drove Mercedes, and you know, we were up there. And so we brought him in. Well, he knew about drugs, and so that's when I started smoking pot. And the first time I did acid, I'd been smoking pot for about 2 weeks. And he bought some acid, and he said, here's 10 hits. Go sell them at school. Well, I took one on the way to the bus stop, and then I get to school, and it hasn't hit me yet. And all I've done is drink and smoke pot. So I'm used to getting high now. So I get to school, and I'm not high yet, so I eat another hit of acid. And then I sell the acid. Except I didn't sell it. I gave it away because I was too high to know. But I loved that. So LSD was a thing for a long time. And I ended up living with a dude that was making that. And I was high on acid for 21 days straight. And that wasn't fun, as it turns out. I finally called my mother up at one point during that trip and said, Mom, I've been doing LSD for 21 days. I need to come home. She was there in 15 minutes, and I was home for another stint. I was in and out of the house at this point between 17 and 21 a lot. Constantly drinking. I got a job in restaurants because they would feed you. So I didn't have to spend my money on food. I could spend it on drugs and alcohol. That was my thinking at 17. Through the years, I've kept going back to school. I'd get a few credits here, a few credits there. Constantly drinking. My probation was over when I was 21. And as an American citizen, all involved thought it'd be best for me to move back to the United States and join the military. And I thought, that's brilliant. And so I moved back. I moved down to Florida where my grandparents lived. And tried to join the military. And I tried the Army and the Navy and the Marines and the Air Force, and none of them wanted me because I burned down houses. So here I was in Florida, not knowing anybody except my grandparents. So what do I do? So I find a bar and I start drinking. And my grandparents, after about 4 weeks, said, get this kid out of here. We don't want him anymore. Well, at that point, my dad's company had moved him to New Orleans. Mom and my sis were going to be moving down later. And so dad said, all right, ship him here. So I got on a bus and went to New Orleans. Well, that is the place for an alcoholic, let me tell you. I now say it's the best food and music in the country, but in my 20s, it's the only place to be for an alcoholic, in my opinion. If you're going to be an alcoholic, you go to New Orleans. They don't tell you when to go home at night. I didn't have sense enough to know when to go home at night. So I was drunk damn near 24/7. Got married in that time. Married a lovely girl. She worked for NASA during the space shuttle program, company that was building the external tank for the shuttle. The Challenger wreck happened, and that was a very scary time because it could have been anybody's keystroke on the computer that caused that, so we didn't know what was going on for a while. It was very scary. Turns out it wasn't her. It was another company. She got transferred to Akron, Ohio, of all places. Irony. Irony at its best. At that point, I knew nothing about AA, though, so it didn't do me any good. We go to Akron. I get a kick-ass job at this, probably the finest steakhouse I've ever worked at, ever. And I'm drinking every night. Every night, I get out of work, making, back in the 80s, $2.50 a night, which is a lot of change for a waiter back then. And I'm spending all of it every night. Coming home with nothing. My wife's pissed half the time. She goes out of town once in a while on business, so I drive her car because she's got a nice car. I wrecked it three times. Well, I wrecked it three times in Louisiana before we moved up there, and then I wrecked it three times again in Ohio. And she kept putting up with me. And I cheated on her while I was up there, and it was just, it was bad. I still feel very bad for her. I've made amends, and we are now friends, and she has alcoholic children, and she calls me for advice now, and we're really close friends. But at the time, I was a dick. Anyway, I left her. She went out of town to some friend's house in Buffalo for a Halloween weekend, and I had to work. So she left at 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, and by 5:30, there was a snowstorm going on, and by 5:30, my car was packed, the dog was in the car, and I was driving back to Louisiana. And I drove through a snowstorm, got down about as far as Kentucky somewhere, spent the night, and drove home, or what I thought was home, Louisiana. She found me, called me up, said, "Hey, can I come down and we'll talk this out?" I said, "You can come down, but I'm not going anywhere." She came down, and I didn't go anywhere. I drank, continued to drink. Fell in love with another woman. She sent me to my first AA meeting, Slidell, Louisiana. And to this day, I only went there once, but I can remember exactly where it is, exactly what part of the strip mall it was in, and what it looked like inside. And it was back in the days when you smoked everywhere, and you walk in, and it's just smoke-filled. You can see the layers of smoke, and everybody's laughing and having a good time and drinking coffee and smoking. And I didn't get a thing out of it. I have no idea what they said, not a clue. Never went again. I had a best friend. He and I were partners in crime throughout my 20s there in Louisiana. And he and I lived together on and off throughout the years in between my exes. We ended up living in a motel in between us couch surfing throughout the years. We ended up living in a motel. So all these years, if I wasn't with a woman, I never had my own place in Louisiana. I was couch surfing, but I did not know I was homeless. Had no clue. Lived in a motel for 6 months, and two gals come over, and they're moving to Florida the next day. We talked ourselves into letting them take us with them, so we could get a fresh start in Orlando working for the Mouse. That was our idea. And we get down there. Oh, yeah, our friends will put you up until you get on your feet. So we get down there, and we get settled in with all of our stuff. and the girls go off to the liquor store to buy booze, and the dudes that owned the house told us to get the fuck out. And we didn't know anybody in Orlando except my grandparents, and I wasn't calling them right now. So here we are now, we're really homeless. I spent 6 months in Salvation Army, not knowing again that alcohol was an issue, had no idea. It's very difficult, if you've ever been homeless, it's very difficult to get out of being homeless. You work in labor pools and you're making no money. And if you're living in a Salvation Army or a good shelter, it costs you a little bit of money to stay there. And it's hard to get on your feet, to get out, to get a real job, to get a place to stay, all that. But I managed to do it, got a job, made provisions with Salvation Army that I could stay out till, 11 o'clock at night when I got out of work, and they tested me every night. I stayed sober for that 6 months that I was in the Salvation Army, because they would test you every day. But as soon as I was able to get out, I started drinking again. Then I was job to job because of my drinking. Met my present wife in a bar. I was working in a bar. She and her girlfriend would come in and drink two martinis real quick on their break and go back to work. And I knew that they were being transferred to Atlanta, but I asked one of them out just to have a date. Hopefully other things. And she said yes, and we went on a date, and I fell in love immediately. And she transferred up to Atlanta, and I was in a lease for a year down here, down in Orlando. My dad, at that point, had moved to Orlando to be with his parents, to take care of them. So I moved in with my dad. We had a year lease. My dad passed away from this disease, but he and I would stay up. After I got home from the bars after work every night, he and I would stay up and drink E&J brandy. We would go through a gallon a night, between the two of us, of E&J brandy. And I don't know if you've ever had E&J brandy, but that stuff is nasty. But it'll get the job done. And anyways, up been back to Atlanta a couple times to visit my present wife. We weren't married at the time. We're still dating. She said, move in. So I moved down. Lease was up, and I moved up to Atlanta and still drinking. Started cheating on her. I got to get to the good part of my story, I guess, pretty soon. We get married in 97, and I'm still drinking. And I start getting DUIs, and they start adding up. Well, I got my first one in Ohio back with my first wife. But apparently it's not on any record because nobody seems to know anything about it. Maybe it was just my imagination, but I'm pretty sure I got a DUI in Ohio. But DUIs in Georgia started racking up. I ran into the back of someone. That got reduced to reckless driving. Then DUI and driving without a license and driving with no insurance and DUI and blah, blah, blah. We all know that story. Well, the last two DUIs I got were in, it was the night before Super Bowl of 2008 and the night before Father's Day of 2008. One was in Forsyth County. I live in Beaufort, so I'm at the corner of Hall County, Gwinnett County, and Forsyth County. The one was in Forsyth County. And the Father's Day one was in Hall County. And I managed to get them tied together into one. But the judge said, you're going to either do 5 years in jail or you're going to go into the DUI court program. And I said, well, okay, I'll go to the DUI court program and I'll skip through that probation like I have every other probation and just cheat my way through it. One of the probations had this special phone in my house that could tell if I'd been drinking. I had to call somebody every once in a while on the phone, and there was a detector on the thing. Well, I figured out how to cheat that. I just put the receiver down here by my throat and talk, and it couldn't detect. I cheated everything every which way but loose. Community service, I can remember sitting around drinking, smoking pot with friends, three different color pens, just filling out community service sheets, turning them into my probation officer. So anyway, I get into DUI court. Judge McClelland in Forsyth County, who's now a friend of mine, along with the whole DUI court team up there. I get to going in that, and at the beginning of DUI court in Forsyth County back then, 2008, November 3rd, 2008 was when I was sentenced, and that's my sobriety date. You had to go to this the meetings were only for the first three steps, and it was a beginner, you know, it was a beginner's meeting. And it was in this dank, dark, dingy, old hospital that is now used as kind of an office building. But at the time, it was wintertime, so it was dark early, and there were no lights on the outside, and it was just dark and dingy, and my wife had to drive me, and she hated it, and it was creepy. But you go inside, and the room that we had the meetings at had canned lighting. And the table was kind of in a square where everybody sat around. And I was there about 2 months, sitting underneath one of those canned lights, and I got it. I got it. The God thing happened. It was a kind of moment. And with that canned light down on top of me, I got it. The beautiful thing about this program for me is because I hated church all growing up, had a pretty decent religious education upbringing. We weren't religious, but my parents studied philosophies of all kinds. They studied Eastern philosophies and Western philosophies, and so I got a good education on all the philosophies of the major religions. But I hated going to church because, and I tell this in meetings all the time, when you go to church, they have a God for you, and you have to follow that God. But when you come to AA, you get to pick your own concept of what God is. And that made sense to me. You know, I can take a little bit from Hindu, and I can take a little bit from Judaism, and I can take a little bit from the Cherokees, and I can take a little bit from Joe Schmo down in Wino Alley. I can take all of that and make a God for myself that makes sense. And that's what happened that night. When that light was shining down on top of me, I got it. My own concept of a higher power. So, but I still, you know, I start buying into the program, but I'm not honest yet. Kind of like what Tim was talking about a little while ago, you know, when you're lying to an employer about your job, I was lying, still lying to everybody. And I was still cheating on my things for the DUI court program. And community service, again, I was filling out community service sheets. And they called Goodwill, the court did. And Goodwill said, oh, no, we haven't done that in 6 months. So I ended up revoking my DUI court probation, and I ended up doing 6 months in jail. Now, it could have been a lot worse than that, but it was only 6 months. Now, I go to jail. I get transferred to Hall County, which is a new jail because Forsyth still had the old crappy jail there, as if there's something good about jail. But, yeah. Anyway, so I go to jail, and the only people that come visit me are my family and people in the AA, in AA meetings. None of my old drinking buddies came to visit me, who I was still in contact with, but none of them came to visit me. My family came to visit me, and AA people came to visit me and sent me literature. So I got a big book. I got a 12 and 12. I got a Daily Reflections. I got, I don't know, two other pieces of literature in there. And I don't know if you've ever been to jail, but there's not a lot to do in jail but read and eat and sleep. So I read through those books. I probably read the big book 8 times in those 6 months. I read the 12 and 12 probably 5 times. I read the other books, you know, a dozen times, several times. And I bought into it, and I got it, and I started listening. I started reading the stories in the back, and then I get out, and I start coming to the meetings more and more, and I start listening to the similarities instead of the differences, and that's when it clicked. All of a sudden, you people, I'm just like you people. You guys don't fit in anywhere else. So many of us, we get praise, and then we fall down again. It happens to a lot of us. And so I'm getting it. Well, I needed some help getting on my feet. I needed some help financially. And I borrowed money from somebody in the AA meeting up there in Buford to get my license and insurance and all that. And I never paid him back. And I felt horrible about it, but I didn't have the money. I felt embarrassed, so I stopped going to meetings in Buford. And to go down to Duluth was just too far to go to meetings, and coming was too far to go to meetings. It just wasn't doing it. And I still am buying this whole AA thing, but I'm not practicing anything. And I'm not calling my sponsor, and I'm not doing any of it that I'm supposed to do. I go to a meeting once a month, maybe. And that was for years. So I'm still believing in the AA thing. I'm still buying it. But I'm not working a program. I've done a fourth and fifth step with my sponsor before all this, but that's about all. Then I kind of went on my own and did 6, 7, 8, and 9, made amends to my ex-wife, made amends to my present wife, which, as it turns out, I apparently did correctly. I got lucky, I guess. I finally came into a little windfall. I went into the meeting there in Buford, and I paid this guy back, and that was about a year and a half ago, and I felt so relieved, and I started coming to meetings and found out that there was a 7 o'clock in the morning meeting. Well, I'm up at 5 or 6 every morning anyway. Why don't I just go to the 7 o'clock meeting? And as somebody pointed out to me once at the 7 o'clock meeting, soon after I started attending, people that go to a 7 o'clock in the morning meeting, they want to get sober. You don't see a lot of newcomers at 7 o'clock in the morning meetings. People want to get sober at 7 in the morning. So I'm starting to do this, and I'm starting to work the program, and for the first time now, at this point, this is 2 years ago, so at this point I've been sober 9 years, and all of a sudden, people are asking me to chair. They're asking me for my opinion on whatever topic we're talking about. If somebody asks me to sponsor them, I'm like, I don't know how to do that. And so I called my sponsor, and he said, yeah, you're going to sponsor somebody. And then the second one asked me to sponsor him. And so that's going on, and I don't know what I'm doing. And my sponsor says, well, why don't you go through the steps with them? I'm like, oh, Christ, I knew you were going to say that. So here I am. I'm going through the steps with them. And it's very cool because this time around, I see it from a different angle. I mean, I know what AA is now, and I know what the principles are behind the steps. Now, so I know what we're looking for when we're talking about, powerlessness and unmanageability and all these things. I understand what it is we're looking for when we get to these steps. So it's coming fairly easy to me. Now, there are hard parts, but my life is getting better by the minute because of it. 2 years ago, my wife got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, the reason for this pin right here. And I don't know if any of you know, but there's a 6% survival rate with pancreatic cancer. So we get the prognosis, and we get the what's going to happen, and she's going to do some chemo, and then she's going to get surgery, and then she's going to do more chemo. And my wife was like, fuck this. I don't want to do all this. Why should I do this? I've had a good life. I'm 70-something years old. I've had a good life. I don't need all that. I don't need to live any longer. And I said, she said, what's the point? And we live with grandchildren. We have grandchildren living in our house. I said, see them? That's the point. See me? That's the point. I'm the point. I need you. This program has taught me to love. I did not know what love was until I got in this program. This program has taught me to love. And fortunately, she's a survivor. She has done great. The doctor comes in every 3 months and tells us that she's a miracle. It's a beautiful thing. But this program has taught me what love is. I have a friend who I, up until September, had not seen since I was probably 8 years old. But you know how you find people on Facebook. And I'm that guy on Facebook, as some of you here in this row here know, that I spew all this love and peace on Facebook. I'm constantly spewing love and peace on Facebook. And she reached out to me and she said, Clay, I want what you have. Now, she lives in Southern California. Clay, I want what you have. How'd you do it? And so I private messaged her and we got to talking, and she has a drinking problem. And I said, all right. So I looked up a meeting and I sent her a big book. That was in March or so of this last year, of this year, almost last year. I go out in September, and she's had a few bumps, but she'd been sober about 30 days at that point. I got to go to a meeting with this gal who reached out to me from 3,000 miles away, and I was able to turn her on to AA, and I got to go to a meeting with her. And I called her on Christmas. She said, yep, still sober. And I almost cried. I'm almost crying now because of that. This program, things are being taken care of for me because I'm not taking care of me anymore. I'm trying to take care of you, and I'm trying to take care of you, and I'm trying to take care of you, and I'm trying to take care of everybody else instead of me. It's not about me. And I have found that if I'm trying to take care of somebody else, if I'm out of my own head, then God takes care of me. My concept of God has done a fine job taking care of me. So I don't know what else to say here, but thank you for listening.
I think it's been said that a good speaker finishes on time, but a great speaker finishes early. Great story. And I've learned a lot about staying sober and being with Clay. And I didn't realize that you weren't going to that many meetings, though you probably told me, because we play a lot of disc golf together, and we're not drinking, and we're not doing that in the woods. Some folks do, but we play a pretty serious game of disc golf, but we have a lot of fun. We always celebrate sobriety with each other, and he was right. I wasn't a very good server. I wasn't a good way at all.
But Tim is a big part of my sobriety as well. He was one of the first people I met in the rooms, and we've been friends ever since. And like you said, I did get him a job there, and he was not very good. But I did not hold that against him. I mean, I kept trying to help him throughout all of it. I kept helping him because I liked him, and he was helping me stay sober. So, and we've been friends ever since.
And maybe because of that honesty, my knee went out. And I'm serving, carrying these trays, and I would have tears streaming down my face. Nice restaurant, people having a big event, you know, celebrating a birthday or whatever, and they got a crying server. And they put me the closest server to the kitchen, so I literally would walk around. Just around the wall, and I'd be right there, and I'd walk back, and It was all I could do. But it was the only job I had, and it was precious to me, and I learned a lot. And one day, when I was reaching for change in a drive-through, I turned and my knee popped back in. This is after all the chiropractors and orthopedic surgeons said I had to get a new knee forever. And then it just popped in. And I pulled over thinking maybe it was so loud. I was like, maybe it's gone completely. It sounded like a gunshot. And I got out and I could walk. And I started dancing. And the person in the drive-thru was like, have a good day. I said, you know it. You know it. And so far, that knee has lasted, and I haven't done anything. So whatever it was, it went away after a little bit of suffering. So a lot of praying, too. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Gotta stop fighting everything.